morning and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayen Deng Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Monday, December 2nd, 2019. More deadly communal clashes in South Sudan, this time in Western Lake State.
After the fighting halted,
we received information of the casualties. The number of dead on both sides has reached 35.
And government forces were among several people killed in Tonj State.
The arrangement of searching for the culprits
and to find out what was the root cause of the clashes are later to be announced.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Authorities say more than 30 people were killed and dozens more were injured during intercommunal clashes that erupted last week and continued over the weekend in Western Lake State. A state police spokesperson says the government dispatched security forces to the area to restore calm. Dengai Deng has this report for VOA from Juba.
Western Lakes State Police spokesperson Captain Elijah Mabor Makwach says the deadly clashes erupted in Maper village between Gak and Manuer sections of the Pakam community in Alor County on Wednesday. Captain Makwach says unidentified gunmen ambushed and killed a man from the Manuer section while on his way from Rumbek to his village. He says the Manuer section accused the Gak section of killing their kinsmen, and the next day, the Manuer launched a revenge attack on the Gak community.
After the fighting halted, we received information of the casualties. The number of dead on both sides has reached 35, and more than 100 others are wounded. That is the current information we have. After the fighting halted, we received information of the casualties. The number of dead on both sides has reached 35. And more than 100 others are wounded. That is the current information we have.
Mabor says state authorities sent security forces to stop the violence in Alor County, which continued until Saturday.
They want to first maintain the security, and then after that, the measures will follow. The fighting is still very fresh, and currently you cannot arrest anybody while there are rumors of renewed attacks. Our forces are now trying to maintain security on both sides to stop fighting between Gak and Manuer sections.
Western Lakes State Information Minister Benjamin Lat Matho says normally the Gak and Manuer sections get along very well in the Pakam community.
The Pakam community, they have intermarriages.
Pakam community have intermarriages and several relations among themselves. Should they persist in fighting, I think a lot of damage will be inflicted. They should calm down, and we are going to approach them one by one, and then we see what we can do. If it means justice, we can come in and arrest the culprits.
Lat says people should not take law into their own hands. He says some of the people who sustained serious injuries were airlifted to Juba Teaching Hospital for treatment.
The government has persuaded
the ICRC to intervene such that those people are airlifted. So the helicopters went yesterday and they airlifted the wounded ones from both sides, and they are now in Juba.
Lat is urging the people of Alor County to cease hostilities so investigators can do their work and bring the perpetrators to justice. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Juba.
More than a dozen people, including government forces, were killed during deadly clashes in Tonj State over the weekend. Tonj State's information minister says authorities are investigating the matter and will track down the gunmen. Viola Elias has the story for VOA from Juba.
Tonj State Minister of Information William Wall says the incident happened on Saturday morning in Yorbok Camp when the armed patrolists opened fire on government forces who were dispatched to the area to disarm civilians. Wall says state authorities sent in security forces to prevent violence from spreading to other counties in the state.
The arrangement of searching for the culprits
and to find out what was the root cause of the clashes are later to be announced, but so far the government is trying to de-escalate further clashes that may protect lives of both civilians and the government forces.
And in fact, when the problem is reduced, the criminals shall be apprehended as soon as possible and they will be taken to court for rule of law.
Wall says the state authorities are investigating the matter. He says 9 soldiers and AMPAS trolleys were injured in the clashes. This is the third time government forces have clashed with armed civilians since the state launched its disarmament program in Tonch last year, according to Wall. He says the state goal is to disarm all armed civilians to reduce insecurity.
Our target is to disarm the civil population. The illegal arms are causing insecurity both internally and externally. So this was the only purpose Tonch state government meant to bring peace to the community of Tonch. And of course, it has been misunderstood by our civilians because they see into it that they want to protect themselves from any aggression.
South Sudan Forces military spokesperson Major General Lul Roy Kong confirmed several government soldiers died in the clashes. He says armed civilians who refused to give up their weapons have clashed on several previous occasions with government disarmament forces in Tonch State.
Our soldiers are facing a lot of difficulties in the disarmament exercises, but we want to ensure that civilians don't continue killing themselves, and the only way to stop killing the innocent is by removing these illegal guns that they are still holding.
Chapter 2 of South Sudan Revitalized Peace Agreement stipulates that the government must train police, military and other bodies to carry out disarmament and demobilization exercise during the transitional period. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
South Sudan's army says 4 people were hurt in Juba's Sherkat neighborhood this morning when armed residents exchanged gunfire with a joint police-military force. The residents, some of whom are soldiers, were resisting a demolition exercise that began over the weekend. Jubek state officials say the residents are occupying the land illegally. Manyang David Mayar has more for VOA from Juba.
South Sudan's military spokesperson Lul Roy Kong says some angry residents whose houses were recently demolished by the Jubek state government ambushed the security forces implementing the demolition exercise.
The joint security forces were ordered to go and implement a demolition order at the place called Island behind the school for the blind, which is around Sherkat area. The exercise has been going on well for the last 48 hours. However, when they were resuming their exercise this morning, they met some resistance on their way, and that was in form of an ambush. Those people whose houses or structures were being demolished organized themselves, and they laid an ambush. And as a result, some shots were fired that included RPG-7. And some light machine guns.
Kong says 2 people who laid the ambush and 2 civilians were hurt in the crossfire. Many residents, including John Bull, accused the security forces of starting the clashes.
The time who started firing us, with us here, some of the soldiers, their houses were demolished. And they came here as a government employees. Because this town of Juba is the capital city where the government is.
Bull, whose house was demolished, says somewhere between 500 and 1,000 families have been affected by the forceful exercise that started on Saturday. He says his family and many others have nowhere to go.
I have 3 wives, and my children are 11. Now we are under the tree. There's nowhere for us to go and stay. Because in 2014, we came here as IDPs from the affected region of the Upper Nile. It started from Bor, Malakan, and Bintiu. All of us, we came here. We came here just to request the owners of the land, and they give us permission for settlement in this area. So it is the government who pulled us to come and stay in this area, not for our own. The government of the county.
Jubek state officials who ordered the demolition exercise deny that accusation. Juma Stephen is the Jubek State Information Minister.
These are land grabbers. They have been warned several times and they are selling the land actually. They are not there to stay, but they are selling the land to people. They produce their own maps, they produce tokens they are giving to people, and they have receipts taking money from people. The place actually is a farm. There is no household. These are just land grabbers. These are even the criminal that's passed information this morning and yesterday that the whole Gumba is going to be demolished, which is not true. They want to create chaos to the people.
Stephen says three people suspected of attacking security forces have been arrested and are in military custody. For VOA News, I am Manyang David Mayar in Juba.
An international aid group says armed men stormed its compound in South Sudan and assaulted several staffers early yesterday in Maban town. Relief International calls the Sunday morning attack a senseless act of violence, according to the Associated Press. Staffers have since relocated from the site. It is not immediately clear who was behind Sunday's attack. South Sudan Army spokesman Lul Rai Kwong said he was unaware of the attack. Human Rights Watch calls the assault a result of impunity for sexual violence and other abuses committed in the conflict. Sudanese journalists are demanding the transitional government reform the media sector and remove all elements of the previous regime from media institutions. Some journalists say Sudan's oppressive media environment over the past three decades tarnished the image of the country. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Khartoum.
A group of Sudanese journalists chanted, "We need to continue with our revolution," as they demonstrated in front of the Sudan's Information Ministry in Khartoum. Many journalists here have expressed concern about the continuing presence of certain elements of the National Congress Party, which they say obstruct the media environment in the country. Khalid Al-Faki, a Sudanese journalist who works for the local news website Tana for Media, says he lost many colleagues who were killed while doing their work. Speaking in Arabic, he says hundreds of other journalists have been detained or harassed.
Sudanese journalists have experienced a lot in intimidation, including killing. Some of them have been killed while on duty. We also recorded incidents of torture, arbitrary detention of hundreds of them.
Another Sudanese journalist, Wiam Tajassir, who edits local sports news on a Royal Arm Arabic daily newspaper, says Sudanese journalists still experience obstacles from members of the former President Omar al-Bashir's regime in the media houses. Speaking in Arabic, Tajassir says journalists want to see the theme of the revolution, freedom, peace and justice, reflected in the Sudan's media landscape.
In the period after the revolution, we are still noticing some people in media house, being national TV, Sudan News, Angezi, newspapers, or radios. They are working against the revolution and practicing hate speech to the public. They are trying by all means to demolish our victory.
Tajassir believes if those elements are not removed, there will be no change in Sudan's media environment. Sudanese journalist Ayman Sinjarab works as a freelancer in Khartoum. Sinjarab says the previous regime used the media to mobilize thousands of Sudanese youth for jihad in southern Sudan. Speaking in Arabic, Sinjarab says in the past, officials used the media to divide Sudanese along ethnic lines. He believes that action led to the secession of South Sudan.
The media has contributed towards mobilizing thousands of our youth to go and fight their brothers in South Sudan. As the result, we lost that part of our motherland due to negative use of media by the previous regime.
Rashid Said Yaqub, the first undersecretary at Sudan's Information Ministry, received the journalist's petition on behalf of the minister. Yaqub promised to work jointly with the Sudanese media institutions to make sure all members of the National Congress Party are removed from the office. He adds, the ministry will draft laws that guarantee freedom of speech and protection of journalists.
We decided to coordinate with the Sudanese Journalist Network in order to go further in applying these reforms demanded by the journalists. And I think it will be very, very quick, especially after the passing of this new law of dismantling of the regime of At-Tamkin of General Omar al-Bashir.
Sudanese journalists are also demanding the government immediately form a fact-finding committee to determine the existence of all media houses in the country and suspend all those that belong to the army and security entities and possibly nationalize them. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Thousands of dollars are raised in a Wisconsin city to build a center in a will. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what do you most like to talk about?
What we talk about most is maybe the nation's economy, the state of the nation. And it's not a new thing. Everyone knows the economy of the nation is in recession. So that's what we keep talking about, the way to handle things, the possible solutions.
Developmental issue, actually, because I realize that many a times we neglect issues that will at least develop our community. So being that I have myself in that community, wherever I get myself, I'll make sure that we discuss developmental issues.
Honestly, I much like to talk about women being progressive and being innovative and having something to do for themselves.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. A group calling itself the Greater Mading Awil Global Partnership raised $17,000 over the weekend to build a community center in Awil Town. Philip Gareng Aguat, the group's finance secretary, says sons and daughters living in the U.S., U.K., and Australia are ready to contribute money to develop projects in their villages back home. Gareng says the money raised at a fundraising event in the U.S. Midwestern city of Oshkosh, Wisconsin, over the weekend, will be used to complete an Awil Town multi-purpose community center that can hold up to 500 people.
We raised over 10,000 in cash and over 7,000 in pledge.
And we are talking about $10,000 in cash,
yeah.
And $7,000 in pledges.
Let me make a correction. It's $10,228.
How are you going to use this money?
We will send the money to the trusted person, and we send more than the money that we raised last night to him. And the money will use probably the way that we directed as it to be used.
It's my understanding that this money is going to be used for completing a resource center. Is that correct?
Yes.
And what is the objective of building a community resource center? I thought you were going to build a hospital or drill borehole for clean drinking water.
That's a good question. Global partnership, we call it the Greater Mading Awil Global Partnership. So we are working the three continents, the U.S., Canada, and Australia. And we have a list of the things. We have like a primary goal, and we have a secondary goal. We have like a big, land. We actually have like two lands. One is in Mapair, which is like a suburb of Awil. And another one is in Apada, which is also a suburb of Awil, but a few kilometers away from downtown Awil. So clinic is one of them. But the reason we picked this one, what we're building now is a function hall. And the function hall is, in a will, we have a problem of flood like every year. And including last year, and you saw the flood issue in many towns in South Sudan. When things like that happen, we don't have a shelter. So like we decided to build this function hall, which is a 500 people capacity. So like when there are natural disasters, it can be used for it. When there are like a workshop or seminars that we see like doing some kind of community awareness, like a health awareness or any other thing, that's why we call it like a community center. Everything will be done over there. And when there are other special occasion that can be done, in that one to rent it, like, you know, wedding and all that. We will use that to generate money to support the other projects, like a clinic.
Philip, listening to you, it appears like you have a lot that you want to do for the people of Awin. Are you consulting the people on the projects you're doing, or you are deciding from the United States for the people?
Yes, it both ways. We actually, those who are now running or taking the mandate here, we went back home several times, and we seen the need. We actually, like, when you go there, you are the one who will observe and see actually, like, what are the things that the people need, things that can change something in people's life, and then you start talking to them and see what are the problems, you know. And then from there, you can come out with a conclusion. So we have a consultation down there. Even like the project that we're doing, we talk with the state government, like the three governors of the former Northern Barada Valley state.
That is Philip Garang-Aguat, Deputy Secretary of Finance for the Madinga Whale Global Partnership. He was speaking with my colleague John Tanza from Boston earlier today. Violence in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo is hampering efforts to halt the spread of the Ebola virus, which has killed 2,200 people since August 2018. International organization warned on Friday of a potential resurgence of the virus after deadly militia attacks on health centers forced aid groups to suspend operations and withdraw staff from the epidemic's last strongholds. The recent deadly violence flared in and around the town of Beni. VOA's Yehias Wuhib asked our reporter in Kinshasa, Anastasi Tudeshi, to describe the latest situation in Beni, which has been at the epicenter of the Ebola outbreak.
Well, today, the city of 200,000 people is very quiet. Shops are closed, traffic is scarce after a week of turmoil. A civil society organization had called for 2 days off to protest against recent attacks.
What happened?
Well, last Monday, protesters have torched down a UN military base and set ablaze the town hall. The population is furious that both UN 18,000 people strong force and the government troops alike have failed to prevent an attack by the ADF, a Ugandan militia. Last week, the threshold of 100 victims in a month was reached after recent attacks. I have to add that the town has also been at the epicenter of an Ebola outbreak, with health services disrupted because of years of instability.
So what has been the political response so far?
Well, so far, dear Congo President Felix Tshisekedi has promised that the UN and the government troops would conduct joint operations to protect civilians in Beni.
And who are these militias? Could you describe who they are for us, please?
Well, the ADF are a Ugandan militia. They claim, they say that they are Muslim, and they come from Uganda. And their modus operandi now is that they buy Congolese military outfits to blend in the population and attack. They are believed to have. They are accused of widespread atrocities, and they are accused of doing so for years now. But their motives are still unclear. But the region, the eastern part and Beni, is a mineral-rich area. That could be one motive. As for the others, they are pretty silent about what they want and need.
That was reporter Anastasi Tudieshi in Kinshasa speaking to my colleague Yehias Wuhib on the latest violence in Beni in the eastern DRC. Four members of a suspected terrorist group appeared at the Middelburg Magistrate Court in South Africa on Monday. Police say the arrest of the four, which started by the detention of the group's leader, comes after 2 years of extensive surveillance on the group's activities, which were aimed at destabilizing the country. Thuso Kamalo reports from Johannesburg.
The magistrate ordered the four accused held in custody until their next court appearance in January. Harry Johannes Nussen, the leader of the National Christian Resistance Movement, NCRM, was arrested on Thursday. His alleged accomplice, Rihanna Haymans, immediately went into hiding, but over the weekend, police arrested her together with brothers Eric and Errol, who were housing her. Hangwani Mulaudzi is the spokesperson for the Directorate of Priority Crimes Investigation, HOCS. He said the group, which members also call the Crusaders, was planning acts of terrorism.
We have managed to uncover a lot of information based on allegations that they wanted to create havoc in the country. This organization is spread all over the 9 provinces of this beautiful country of South Africa. This is a formation that is perpetuating issues of hatred, issues of racism.
He said the group could have hundreds of members.
They wanted to create havoc by planting bombs in shopping malls, informal settlements. There were claims that they wanted to also take over army bases as well as some police stations. Critical is that they also have the courage, you know, of asking donations from various people to, for them to be able to go ahead with their plan.
After searching one of Nussen's properties, police discovered a possible explosives factory, electronic devices, documents, an unlicensed firearm and ammunition. They found similar items when the other three were arrested. Nussen is a retired pastor and a former member of the South African National Defense Force. At his court appearance, it came out that police had received a tip-off that the group was intending to launch the attacks, which were aimed at black people. Nussen is an admitted racist. For years, he has called on white South Africans to wage a war against blacks. Zenzo Moyo is a political analyst at the University of Johannesburg. He says it's too soon to tell the level of threat the group poses to national security.
At the moment, it may not be possible to tell whether these are really terrorists or not. Investigations are still going on, but it would seem as if these are people that still harbor their narrow nationalism, which was prevalent in South Africa. So these are nationalists, narrow nationalists that are still in South Africa at the moment.
Other analysts say South Africans have no reason to be very worried, saying the group has no capacity to commit acts of terrorism. Some describe the case as an isolated incident, and similar ones may pop up once in a while in a country like South Africa. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
And that's our show for this Monday. We leave you with the song Saj Dalalo by Kamal Tarbas. I'm Ayen Dangbior in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
نظرة بس هبليلي 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 أحلى العيون السود وليه يا مليحة زيه وليه يا